This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
We might as well get started. We've got quite a long program to get through. Could I just ask you, first of all, to switch your mobile phones off? Well, good afternoon and welcome to the screening of In Memory of Marilyn. I'm Peter Thorley. I'm a curator at the National Museum of Australia, and we have with us today Ian Dunlop, who made the film, and Pip Devison from ANU's Centre for Visual Anthropology, who are co-hosting this event today. Pip worked with Ian on the film and have been involved. They've been involved together on a number of projects, so they have a very close working relationship. And there will be a discussion after the film led by Pip and Ian, so don't run away. We have bookings, so we know where to find you. Also, please be advised that the question and answer will be recorded and used on our website, and Prue over there will be roaming with the mic. This film runs in conjunction with the exhibition Yallingburra Art of the Junkal, which is on show here at the National Museum in the Gallery of the First Australians until the 25th of September. It's been extended. So if you haven't already seen it, make sure you do. And if you have, I'm sure after seeing the film today, you'll want to go back and see it again. It really is a wonderful exhibition, and it's a perfect complement for this film. Now, to introduce Ian. Ian Dunlop is one of Australia's foremost ethnographic filmmakers. He spent over 30 years making films for the Commonwealth Film Unit. In the 1960s, he made the classic People of the Australian Desert series and an epic film Towards Burunya Manhood in Papua New Guinea. This was followed by the long-term Yirrkala film project in northeast Arnhem Land, consisting of 22 films shot over a period of 12 years. Ian's films have won many awards, most notably the prestigious RAI Film Prize for Conversations with Dundawoi Wanumbi in 1996. He's built up long-term relationships with the Aboriginal communities he's worked in, and his films continue to be a valuable resource to those communities in which he has worked. Could you please welcome Ian Dunlop?
Well, thank you, Peter, for those very generous remarks. And thanks to the National Museum for putting on this screening to support their exhibition, Yallingburra. At the risk of repeating some of the information that's in the film, I want to go through some of the key events that really all led up to the making of this film. So let us start at the beginning. In the time before time, two great ancestral beings, the Junkar sisters, went in their canoe on a great journey. They were beautifully decorated, and around their necks they hung dilly bags. And in the dilly bags were the symbols of the Junkar law. They landed in northeast Arnhem Land at a spot which they named Yallingburra. Here, they created the first people, the children of the Junkal, the children of the Rirrajingu clan. They also performed many other creative acts when they were here. They named and gave meaning to all the natural phenomena. They thrust their digging sticks into the ground from which wells came up, and the sacred jutta trees. For untold years, the lore of the Junkal continued. Now I want to make a huge leap forward to the 1930s. Early in the 1930s, a policeman in northeast Arnhem Land was speared by the Yolngu. The Yolngu is the name of the people of northeast Arnhem Land. Well, you don't spear Northern Territory policemen. And they decided they were going to mount a massive punitive expedition and wipe out everybody, lock, stock and barrel. The Methodist Church heard of this down south, and they said to the government, no, no, let us set up a mission and pacify these wild people. Luckily, the government agreed. And so, in 1934, the Reverend Wilbur Chaseling landed at the spot where Yirrkala Creek flows into the sea. This was Wiradjuri land, and camped there was the great leader Marlin and his family. Marlin gave Chaseling permission to come back and set up a mission. Gradually, people from other clans came and visited the mission and then started to stay there permanently. But Yirrkala remained a very isolated place until just after the Second World War, when things suddenly and dramatically changed. It was discovered that everybody was walking on pure bauxite. Mining companies from around the world started prospecting. Eventually, a mining lease was granted to a Swiss-Australian consortium, Nabalco. A huge open-cut bauxite mine was planned. It would run right to the boundary of the mission, together with a township, an alumina treatment plant, and an international wharf. It was to be the biggest industrial development in Australia at that time. The Yolngu were to be thrust into the industrial age in a matter of 2 or 3 years. Fearing the consequences of this uninvited invasion of their land, the Yolngu took Nabalco and the Commonwealth to court in the Supreme Court of the Northern Territory. This was the first land rights case in Australian history. The court sat over 1970 and 71. In 1971, Mr. Justice Blackburn handed down his decision. The Yolngu did not own the land. After the loss of their land rights case, the Wiradjuri realised that it was more important than ever to reassert the law of the Junkau. The great leader of the Wiradjuri, Marlin, had died before this in 1967. Wanjuk, Marlin's eldest son, planned a ceremony both as a celebration of his father and as a reaffirmation of the law of the Junkau. I started what was to be a long-term film project at Yirrkala in 1970. In my second year, 1971, Wanjuk asked me to film the ceremony, the film we're going to see today. The film reflects many of the themes seen in the Yalanbre exhibition, and I do urge you all to see the exhibition. The inspiration for this exhibition came from Bandak Marika, one of Marlin's daughters. In her introduction to the beautiful book which supports the exhibition, Bandak writes, "In a way, Yalanbre is like the film about my father, in memory of Marlin. In showing people this is our land, these are our ancestors, and they are important for Aboriginal people, not just our family." Thank you.
I'll just introduce myself again. I'm Pip Devison, and I'm very pleased to be here with Ian, my long-time colleague and dear friend. I'm also very pleased that the screening of this film, in conjunction with the Yalanbre exhibition, is the first in a new Centre for Visual Anthropology Friday Forum series. It's a little plug for that at the ANU. It seems wonderfully appropriate to me, highlighting as it does such a wonderfully visual culture. It brought to mind for me something that a clan elder, Joe Goombala, a Yolngu elder, likes to say about Yolngu culture. He describes it as being about the beauty of all creation, the nature of all things, which I think we see very much in this film. So rich in visual imagery, the songs, dances and objects in this ceremony, as well as the imagery of the paintings in the exhibition, are just a wonderful experience. And I really encourage you all, after seeing the film, to go back and have another look at the exhibition. As Ian says, I've worked with him on, or perhaps it was Peter, worked with him on the films. You probably didn't recognise the name there. I was Philippa Kirk way back then, 30 years ago when I first started working with you, Ian. And we worked together over many years. I had a bit of a big gap to have three kids. I was way from the project for 10 years and then rejoined Ian to work on the last 11 films that came out of the project here in Canberra at the Institute of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Studies. And since that time, I've had a couple of small grants to write about the project. And this has involved going through a lot of the supplementary material that was produced as part of the project, a lot of documentation by Yolngu and anthropologists, and also Ian's diaries of his field trips, which I found quite amusing in places, which has given me a real insight into the way that the whole project unfolded. So I guess just to begin with, before I open things up to questions, I just wanted to highlight some of the things that I think are most significant about the project and this film in particular. The very first thing that Ian filmed in 1970, the year before this, was a village council meeting at Yirrkala that had been called to discuss the film project. The chairman of the council, Roy Marika, one of Mowelin's brothers, told the other elders gathered there, "This is our chance to record our history for our children and our grandchildren. Before we die, we should make a true picture, our own Yolngu picture, that will teach our children our dances and lore and everything, our singing, our own Yolngu culture." And as we see here, a year later, Roy, in this film, says, "We've erected this jutta to replace the old one. This new one will stand strong for our children to see. This is our law and we're keeping it strong." And I feel that, in some senses, this film and the fact that Yolngu asked Ian to make this film of their ceremony, this film stands like the jutta tree as something that will stand strong for future generations to see. In 1971 also, as Ian said in his brief introduction, one of the things that was really preoccupying Yolngu was the loss of their land rights case. And this, I think, is the other key reason that Yolngu chose to be involved with this, with Ian's filming. To go back to that quote from Bundak in the catalogue for the exhibition, "Yallingbra, the exhibition, is like the film about my father, in memory of Mowelin, in showing people that this is our land, these are our ancestors. So we see that one of the remarkable things, I think, about the Yirrkala Film Project is this agency of Yolngu in having grasped the potential of film and having their own ideas about how they could make use of it. And the fact that Ian was open to this all those years ago makes this project, I think, very different from some of the sorts of stamp collecting mentality kind of films that had been going on before that time. Its filming of ceremonies had been very much a sort of let's get a record of every different kind of ceremony kind of approach, without really perhaps understanding the way in which every ceremony is a unique event and the meaning of the ceremonies for the people holding them at any particular time. And I have a little story, if you'll just bear with me one minute more, to illustrate this sort of mentality. The reason some of the film here that you've just seen was in black and white is that in 1971, Ian decided to use some black and white stock to maximise his budget. But he'd come prepared to film ceremonies with colour stock that had been pretty much reserved just for that purpose. The filming of this ceremony was also partly financed by the then Institute of Aboriginal Studies and continued despite the Institute's sudden and mistaken decision that a Junkow ceremony had already been filmed. That was the Junguan at Yirrkala that was filmed by Roger Sandall. And they thought this was going to be a repeat performance. Junguan, Junkow sounded similar. Fortunately, Ian continued to cover the ceremony as fully as possible, despite numerous telegrams telling him that he must stop. And I quote from Ian's diary. His recording of one of these telegrams. Institute of Aboriginal Studies cancel shooting of Junguwal ritual. Stop. Please return stock allotted to this project. Stop. And Ian continues, so we'll have to decide whether we received this telegram or not.
And I didn't receive it.
And so that's all from me. I'll hand over to any questions that we might have from the audience. Melinda.
Thanks to you both, and thanks for sharing that very, very beautiful and mesmerising film with us. And Pip, thanks, that gives us a lovely context for the film. And while I was watching it, I was thinking, this is 40 years since you shot that footage, Ian, and I wonder if you might just tell us a little bit about what goes on in your thinking now when you sit here 40 years on and look at that footage.
Well, perhaps one of the main things that struck me seeing this film was the beautiful shooting of Dean Semler, the cameraman. And I must acknowledge the huge debt of gratitude that I owe to the rest of the unit, in particular Dean Semler, camera, and Bob Hayes, sound, who did an absolutely amazing job.
Can I just mention, Dean Semler went on to win an Oscar for Dances with Wolves. So but you can see the brilliant camera work, handheld camera, you know, just amazing with all this action going on around him, and how he did it, I don't know. So.
And to be perfectly honest, in seeing this film today, I think I saw many more things in it, more richness than I had perhaps ever seen before. It's a long time since I've seen the film, probably, I don't know, 20 years or something. And of course, when you're shooting the film, you only have a fairly vague idea of what's going on. It's only afterwards, when Wanjuk documented it with me, that I got the richness of all this symbolism and that. But when it's going on, you just hope that what you're focusing on is the most important stuff. And if you see something else happening, you gently grab Dean Stemler's shoulders and gently move him around, pick up something else. But it's you're working to a certain extent in the dark. You don't have someone whispering to you in your ear exactly what's going on.
Although Ian did a lot of whispering in Dean's ear, I believe. Telling him, you know, there's something happening, guiding him, yeah.
I also am delighted to think that Yolngu culture is still as rich now as it was then, particularly at the Clan Homeland Centres. This film was shot before the Clan Homeland movement, where people from Yirrkala, different clans, moved back to their own clan land starting about 1974, to form important sites at beautiful spots on their clan land. And most Australians don't know anything about this Clan Homeland movement, but it's one of the most positive and exciting aspects of Aboriginal life today, I think. These are really viable small centres. The government is doing its best to close them down, you know, the intervention, but they are really positive centres where the Yolngu rule their own life. Bark painting is prolific. They get food partly traditionally from hunting and food gathering and fishing, and partly from the mission store, or it's no longer a mission, from the store. And their ritual life is as rich as it ever was. So this is an incredibly important project, but I'm straying off the subject a bit.
Hi. Given also your 40 years, I'm wondering if you might reflect on, this is a methodological question, if you might reflect on how the film might be made differently today, given Yolngu, Anangu take up in technologies. Do you think it would be made differently today, or do you think it would be the same sort of a film?
No. if it was made by the Yolngu, and as I didn't quite catch what you said, but I think you acknowledged that they were now doing their own filming up at Yirrkala. And I've seen quite a few of them. Some of them are, in a way, a bit similar to my style of very straightforward, as it were, record making. Some are much more imaginative, which is really quite, I found quite amazing when I first looked at it. More mystical in a way. So that there's a mixture going on at the Media Centre at Yirrkala now of following in my kind of very formal recording and letting their imagination go more.
There's also reuse of some of the material in new films, so sort of a mixing of the old film with new stuff that people are shooting themselves in a very creative way. So, yeah.
I could never make such a film today because there wouldn't be, in those happy days, Film Australia was fully financed by the government. Mm. Now you have everything has to be pre-sold to television. You'd have a television producer looking at your thing, and you know no shot would be more than a few seconds long because people won't take it. Well, at least you people have taken it. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah, there was a wonderful thing called the National Interest Program that funded a lot of this kind of work. Although Ian's work was pretty unique at Film Australia. But I might just also say, I've got another little quote here from Roy Marika at that same council meeting at the beginning, very beginning of the Yirrkala Film Project. He sort of wraps up the meeting by saying, Thanks to you people, it's very good indeed. And one day I'm going to write a letter to the Commonwealth Film Unit so they will send a copy of the tape here so you can hear your voice, the other elders' voices at the meeting, and what you have been discussing and making law. It's law now. It's a good thing for us to remind everyone of all your voices. So I'm going to put your voice in the council house for your children's children when they have grown up. Now, the films never ended up in the council house, but they've ended up at this new, the art centre at Yirrkala, Bukalanga, Mooka. And there's this very, very vibrant media unit there now, and it's wonderful to see people making their own films out of that unit, but also incredibly still watching these films all the time. It's just amazing. They've got a sort of a iMovie set up, and they've got a little theatrette, and kids come in after school and go through, you know, on the computer selecting what they want to watch. And I'm just amazed when I'm there to see the old Yirrkala films still playing and kids sitting there enjoying them immensely. So it's really nice to think that that is sort of part of the inspiration of some of the new stuff that's being made as well.
I'm just wondering if that beautiful poetry of the songs has been written down and published in a book that we could read again.
Well, I'm not sure, but I mean, there have been many people, many anthropologists and linguists who've worked at Yirrkala and would have, I'm sure, written down many of these songs. Whether these particular ones have been or not, I don't know.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a comment. Thank you. Thank you so much, Ian. It's been a wonderful occasion, but you can see the power of the oral tradition and how the children. I thought it was just fascinating to see how the children were learning the dance, and they were there all the time, and you know, some of them were engaged, some of them weren't. But that was very powerful, and I can see how important that is. And I also just want to say, from my own perspective, I hadn't seen the film before, and I really regret it that I hadn't, because it's so tremendous. And also to see a lot of those famous Bach painters. Not only in person, I've seen them in photographs, but to see them, you know, the power that they had, the leadership that they were showing, and you know, their knowledge of their culture, and I thought the whole you know, the whole sort of I suppose the structure about the what we're learning about the arrival of the people was really fascinating as well, and. Just such a brilliant film, so thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. No, it's true, and if you again, I just can't sort of recommend enough that people go to the exhibition again, because you'll see a lot of those artists represented there.
Just one over here. Sorry.
Hi. Mine was a bit more of a reflection, something that I've learnt just from watching the film, and it seemed how it was really important through the poetry of the film. There'd be a bit of a poem of the Jankawan arriving or travelling, and then there was the reinforcement of all the clans' names, they would so it seemed like everybody was really sort of huddled up close together and reinforcing who they were and who they're related to and how they're connected. So it was a constant, they're telling themselves their own stories and reinforcing it that way. And I that was just very powerful coming through that film. Do you have any comments on that aspect?
Well, only that I'm very glad you got the message. I mean, it does illustrate the. I mean, Yolngu life in Aboriginal life is all about connections. Everybody is connected in kinship to everybody else, and to all of nature, in fact. And so they are constantly in everything they do. These connections come out. Sometimes, And they are at different levels. You get the open story, which is what Wanchuk gave me for the film. But then you get deeper and deeper levels of meaning and deeper, deeper connections until you get to the very bottom. Mm-hmm.
That was an amazing movie. I loved it. But one question I want to ask you. I've recently read a book called Why Warriors Lay Down and Die, which gave a very pessimistic view of the people of Arnhem Land and their culture, saying that because there's a whole generation of Aboriginal men who have died because of alcoholism, that they're tending to lose their culture. So specifically, those beautiful young men who were the dancers, how many of those are still alive and still cultural leaders at the moment?
Well, a lot of them are not alive anymore. Alcohol has had a devastating effect on the people at Yirrkala. At the clan homelands, there's no alcohol. It's not at any of the ones I've ever been to, which is why they're such beautiful places. But there are still many of the young men who you saw in the film are now the leaders. The original leaders at Yirrkala. And while most of them have, I must confess, gone through pretty rough periods, they're now emerging as important leaders and important painters. So we can just hope that enough of them have the strength to continue. But in some clan centres, clan homelands, the ritual life, as I say, is extremely strong. So the young men will be getting great strength. I mean, maybe you could talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that there certainly was a massive disruption that, you know, and it continues. Incredible, terrible problems brought about by alcohol and other pressures of life, which have, you know, been terribly damaging for Yolngu culture and young people particularly. But this is sort of, in a way, part of the reason that these films are so important as well. I was going to say, just recently, a man who's about my age came to Canberra. He's one of the people that's working at with the Mauka project. I was talking about the media centre, now trying to make films of his own. He came to Canberra and interviewed Ian, turned the tables on him, so to speak. At the end of their session, Ian asked him, you know, how do you see my films now? You know, what do you think, you know, happy with the way that they were done and so on. And Wukun talked, it seemed to me, really from the heart, saying to Ian that the films have been so important to him because he was not around for a lot of the time when he was a young man, learning from his father when he should have been. So now he's able to watch these films and he feels is learning a lot from them. So, you know, I mean, that's a wonderful thing that he said that. But, you know, certainly there has been huge loss of knowledge. I think the women, to a large extent, have sort of filled the gap, and I think you see that a little bit in this film. There's a huge involvement of women in this ceremony, and, you know, and women around that time were starting to paint stories that traditionally had been painted by men. So they sort of took up, you know, a lot of the work. But, yeah, I think it's certainly true. There has been a huge disruption in the passing on of that culture. Yeah.
Having read that book, I had the impression that a lot more of the culture had been lost than I've got the new people are saying now, which makes me feel a lot better about the situation.
Well, I think it varies a lot from place to place and, yeah, family to family probably, yeah.
We've just got time for one more question. We have just, it's amazing actually, the questions just go for, they're just too interesting, you sort of lose time.
Thank you. Thanks for the film. It was amazing. I'm just asking a question because I'm a school teacher, and because you said that the films were watched by people and at Yirrkala, what kind of material is available for teachers to use in schools? Because I think, like, that's just amazing. Like, if I could show students things like that, I think it would give them a really different perspective on Indigenous Australia, and, you know, people often don't get to go to these places and see it for themselves. And also how I can find out more about that Clan Homelands project. Thank you.
Well, there are 22 films in the Yirrkala Film Project, so if you or your students went through those, they'd learn a lot about the very different aspects of life in Northeast Arnhem Land. As far as support material is concerned, Pip is writing you explain, Pip.
Well, perhaps I should just say the 22 films can be got from Screen Australia, as it's now called. I've worked on a few different websites which might be of use to some of them, particularly educational websites. There's one that accompanies, that's sort of grown out of another film of a ceremony. It's called Junguan.
Junguan at Gurkawoy.
No, the film is Junguan at Gurkawoy, yes, but there's a website on the Junguan too. I can give you the name of it so you can find it. And there's another website called Living Knowledge. If you Google that, there's a lot of educational material on that. But also you could go to the Mawka Project videos that are on YouTube, the things that are coming out of the Mawka Project now, which would be, yeah, I'm sure your students would enjoy. So, okay, so I can give you some of those names later, if you like.
Well, thank you, everyone, for coming, and it's been a long program, so thank you for your patience. I wonder if you could all just thank Pip and Ian.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.